Hey now, welcome back and welcome in. Thanks for joining us one more time. Thanks for hitting the download button and for telling a friend. I hope you tell a friend. I'm Pastor Dave. Sitting with me, Randall the Armor Bearer. We are
They That Believe.
This is where church culture meets pop culture. We talk entertainment news, current events, world news, geek news, all filtered through a lens of lifestyle Christianity. It's been about a week and a half ago, I had a birthday. I turned 43 years old. And within 24 hours, it was as if my body became, I described it this way, my body became like a car that somehow knows that the warranty has just expired and everything wants to fall apart.
That's right.
So as we sit here today talking, I'm getting prepared for, well, I'm not getting prepared. I don't know what you do to prepare. I'm emotionally preparing for a small surgical procedure because I have, drum roll, I have a hernia. it's an interesting thing, and I wish there was some, a fantastical story or something cool that I could tell you about how this happened. I think it happened either putting my pants on or putting my boots on. So I had a birthday like a week and a half ago. I had a day off that day. And the next day, it was a work day for me. Now I go into work at night. And I got up and I figured out also, because when I went to one of these recent doctor's appointments, they put me on the scale and it was horrifying. that's another thing. I don't know. Maybe that's contributed, but I didn't realize how... You know, you kind of have this sense that you're putting on weight. Very rarely do you ever, unless you're intentionally trying to drop pounds, do you really feel like you're losing. But, you know, you really can feel it when you're putting it on. I don't know why that is. And oddly enough, we had one of Gretchen's friends came to our house a few weeks ago, was visiting, and she left. And Gretchen said something like, oh, she said she thought you'd really lost weight or slimmed down. And I'm like, no, not quite. I'm quite a bit heavier probably than the last time she saw me. Anyway, where'd I get lost in my story? So I'm getting dressed for work that night, and I grabbed a pair of uniform pants, nothing fancy, polyester uniform pants, you know, and I hadn't worn these particular kind in a while, and it's been getting warmer, and they're a little cooler and lighter, so I'm going to try to wear these. I go to put them on. They're real snug, and I said, well, that's okay. You know, by the time you cinch up and put your belt on and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But so I put them on, and I put my boots on, and I put my belt on, wrapped everything up. And you know, I'm running on schedule at that point. Well, I just decide these pants are too uncomfortable. I can't wear them. I'm not going to spend the next 8 to 10 hours in these pants. They were too tight. But now, this is like, I don't want to be sexist, but I think of like this being like a woman thing. You know, when a woman decides going last minute going out the door that you want to change clothes. So I'm like, well, now I have to hurry. Mm-hmm. So I had to go grab another pair of pants that I knew were comfortable that I've been wearing recently, but I had to take my boots off. So I'm scrambling. I'm in a hurry. I throw my boots off, get these pants off, put these new boots on. I got to get to work. And somewhere in between getting those pants on and then rolling around to get my boots on, man, it hit me like a mushroom cloud. It felt like somebody kicked me in the groin.
Wow.
And it's one of those things, like had it set in a little slower, I might have suspected any number of things, but I mean, it was the first thing that came to my mind. And somehow or another, I managed to get through that. I mean, I got dressed and went to work and made it through my shift. And getting in and out of the car was absolute hell. And so what's happened is I went to the doctor like the next day or to our local nurse practitioner who normally treats and sees us. And she wasn't really in a hurry to make a diagnosis, but it was close enough. She said, you need to go see the surgeon pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And so it put me off work. And the only relief that I could get or have been getting, now I'll say this, the past couple of days have been, for some reason or another, maybe some of those nice folks out there praying for me or something. I appreciate you if you need to take some credit for the relief I've had in the last couple of days. But I mean, I'm not going to lie. For about 6 days, it was agony. And the only thing that I could do to get any relief was to lie down flat. Mm-hmm. Flat on my back, stretched out. which is, you know, makes you, then you feel like you're just ready to give up the ghost. Right. It's like my body is already trying to put me into this position physically.
Yes.
So I just need
6 feet down and I'll be ready to go.
I just need to wrap my arms up around my chest and, and standing not too bad again, if I'm kind of in that straight plane, but any kind of bending those first few days, man, like even standing at the refrigerator, when you just kind of have to reach over to grab something in the back, agonizing. Couldn't tie my own shoes. Gretchen being the saint that she is, you know, I mean, you talk about how pitiful and how humbling. I'm like, will you tie my shoes for me? And of course, I didn't think about it. She's a professional. She says, yeah, I do this several times a day. I'll tie, you know, so basically I'm a special needs child. But for some reason, the last couple of days, the last 2 days, maybe 3 days, it seems for some reason like it subsided a little bit. I mean, I'm hurting as we're sitting here talking now, but obviously I'm not in the extreme agony that I was. I'm able to breathe and to talk and all this. So I'm a couple of days, well, as we sit here, tomorrow I have to go for, now this is a new thing to me. Now you're talking to a guy who never really even gets sick. It's very unusual. I don't even get headaches normally. So this is all kind of uncharted territory for me. But we're going through this process. Tomorrow I have to do pre-administrative stuff or admissions, pre-admission stuff. I don't know what that is, where they'll test me and God forbid, oh, they're going to weigh me again. I guess. Just
make sure you're able to go under for anesthesia.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. So the anesthesiologist, let me be very careful there, make sure I get that out, the guy that gives you the, or the lady that gives you the anesthesia, you know, knows if you got a blood pressure problem, weight problem, whatever they need to know, because that's a very hard science, isn't it?
Yeah, they got
very
pretty
specific
exact
formulas to make sure that whatever they give you, you'll come back from
and you don't wake up in the middle of them cutting on you.
Yeah, that would
be the worst
part,
I think.
So do that tomorrow, and then a couple of days after that we'll go in and have the actual procedure. I'll say this, I've only had one visit with my actual doctor, the surgeon that's going to do the procedure. He was the next person in line that we went to see, that we were referred to, told you'll really like him, and we do. This will go ahead and plug him. We like the guy. Dr. David Villarreal, who's at Jackson Surgical Associates in Jackson, Tennessee, went to see him, and the appointment was, I don't even remember, 2:30. We get there at 2 o'clock because I know, okay, I'm going to have to fill out. I mean, they give you all this homework to do. You got to fill out all that paperwork every time you go to a new office, you know. So we get there early. We know we got to fill out the paperwork. The people that work there, just as nice as could be, actually got called in before I was finished with my paperwork. I'm thinking we're going to be there the whole afternoon, the whole evening. I'm trying to think, will we even have time to go eat dinner? Who knows? I mean, we weren't there the whole thing from in the front door to out 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours. The examination didn't take long, and that's not a criticism. You figure out very immediately. Dr. Villarreal is very competent and very, very sure of himself. I liked him. I saw something familiar in him. You know, I'm like, this is my kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know,
he's my people.
But I'll tell you this, though, and this is not, I don't want anybody to think I'm angry at him or got my feelings hurt or anything, but our relationship was tested immediately when he put me up on, I don't know, it's not a chair, it's not a table, I don't know what it is. And he started poking around looking for the problem. And I got to tell you something. Had he asked me, I would have in that moment confessed to starting the Chicago Fire, kidnapping the Lindbergh baby, and being the third shooter on the grassy knoll. He was not hurting me. You know, I had to tell myself that he's trying to identify the problem, and he identified it.
Yeah,
boy,
he's probably pretty quick at it.
And in my mind, it wasn't very quick. It was like in my mind, at times moving in slow motion. You know, I'm sure it probably was only a matter of seconds, but once he kind of poked around there, and he's like, yep, you got a hernia. Nope, okay. Anyway, and he was like, he said, you want it fixed? And I'm like, you know, what are the other options?
Do I have a choice?
I didn't know there was. Yeah, I didn't. I kind of thought this whole thing was going one way. You know, and I thought we were all kind of headed to one eventual ending. But apparently, he was open for alternate ideas. I don't know. I don't know what it. You know, and well, it, when we talked about this, because and I had heard of this that people get these hernias, and you may have heard these stories where. Somebody has a hernia for years.
Yeah, and because like it doesn't push it back in
because it doesn't hurt them, or yeah. they're able to work. Obviously, you can take from what I've told you. Mine is not that way. I don't particularly want to live with this any longer than I have to. But yeah, so we talked about it. He's like, well, you know, I had one guy that came in here and he'd had it for 15 years and or whatever. You know, it may have been seven. I don't know, but it was a long time and
longer than you wanted to deal with it.
Oh, I couldn't do it. And he said, but you know, the bad thing about that is, you know, the guy thinks, and I get that because I think we've talked about that in here before too. Somehow my teeth were going bad when they didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. You put it off, and that's kind of what this cat did. He said, but you know, by the time he came in to get it done, it was bad and it hurt him and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, in a way, I guess it's good that when mine came on, it came on. As harshly, as vigorously as it did. I have a vigorous hernia.
I did that with my gallbladder. I had my gallbladder taken out, gosh, probably 17, 18 years ago.
Well, my question to you was going to be, had you had any hernia experience? You're still a little young. Well, I don't know if it's really an age thing or not.
I don't know.
So you've not had the hernia thing. You're gonna go, the next closest thing for you is a gallbladder.
Yeah.
I know absolutely nothing about a gallbladder.
Well, I mean,
what does it even do?
It just produces enzymes or something to help your digestive system do stuff. But, mine got bad, and I just kind of let it slide because I didn't have insurance at the time. I think I was like 20.
Did you know it was a gallbladder, or you just knew you had an ailment?
I just knew it hurt. You know, okay. It felt like someone was kicking you in the ribs.
Right.
But I let it go for way too long, and by the time they got to it, it was pretty bad. So I ended up in the emergency room on Thanksgiving night.
Huh.
And all my Thanksgiving dinner came right back out.
Wow.
So it was horrible.
Wow. So that's where I am. So keep me in mind. I guess by the time we come back, I'll have had this done, and you know, hopefully have a speedy recovery. You know, you were just asking me before we sat down, what can I expect after? And it's one of those things you don't really know. You know, some people bounce back after a couple of days. Some people are going to take, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. So I'm hopeful for a quick recovery. If there has been any silver lining in this? My Netflix queue has gotten very tidy. I have gone back and things that have been in there. I mean, I've had stuff queued up like I'm gonna watch since I got Netflix like 2-3 years ago. Whenever
well, see when you first told me about that, I was concerned because I know you and you're kind of a active, want to be doing something kind of guy. I couldn't imagine you just laying down.
Who are you talking about?
But so I was thinking, I was like, you know, I got to do something for Brother Dave. And
no, no.
So I actually developed, I got you a snowflake present for your ailment, something you can use while you're laid up in bed. And I figured, you know, you could report back to us and see if this helped you in any way.
Yeah.
So here you go.
Let me see what we have here.
Decorative tin.
Let me shake it to the, what's in the tin? Let me see here. It's a spinner.
It's a fidget spinner.
It's a spinner. You know, I was wondering if I needed to get one of these or not.
Well, see, now you got one. And I saw it, and it's got a cross and a shield on it. So
listen,
I thought,
you can hear it. Hang on. Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Go ahead. So, yeah. It's got
the cross and the shield on it. So I thought, that's Brother Dave spinner right there.
How about that? Well, how is this a snowflake award, though?
Well, because, you know, the snowflakes need the spinners, the fidget cubes in school. And
okay. Well, let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
And you're in the schools, too. Yeah. So, and you got kids. You got spinner-age kids.
Yes.
So you've got all the bases covered on this. This is lovely, too. Thank you for this. It's heavy. I guess it needs to be to have good weight on it to spin. That's awesome. I hope I'm not too stoned on anesthesia to play with it.
Well, so that's what I was thinking. If you got really stoned, it'd probably be even more fun. I don't know.
Very cool.
I don't know how that works.
I was about to say. Oh, okay, so these spinner things. And if everybody hasn't seen them, they're triangular, usually sort of triangular. They were, what were those? You remember those old Nerf boomerangs? Mm-hmm. Kind of that kind of shape.
Yeah.
Or like a Kung Fu throwing star, like you'd get at the flea market. They're kind of that shape.
Now, right.
It's not either one of those things. I let you hold them in your fingers and you spin, and I seen some kids do some tricks with them. I saw something on YouTube where some guys put like a compressed air tank on one to see how fast they could get it going.
Oh, really?
And a piece of it came off and nearly killed somebody. So anyway, and I see they're advertised as, or people go, oh, it's for, you know, if you're fidgety or this helps you focus and all. I don't get that at all, because all I see is a toy.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a toy.
In what scenario are you supposed to have a task in front of you that you should be doing or focusing on, and somehow introducing a toy into the mix helps you?
If you were severely autistic, I'm talking like, you know, if you had severe autism problems where you had, you were in a home or you had aggression problems with it.
Yeah, low functioning.
Low functioning. Something like that could probably get your mind off of something that you weren't, like a bad behavior. But for the average kid in school that's just doing schoolwork, it's probably just a toy to play with.
My thinking was, if I'd have known, you know, if I, you know, knew then what you know now, if this is the new way of doing things, how I could have, how we could have made the case to bring our toys into class with us when we're supposed to be doing math or something.
Oh, this helps me study, you know, with my G.I. Joe guys.
I was just about to say G.I. Joe for some reason. I had that on my mind. I was about to go, well, I'll finish that math problem. I need to focus right now on Cobra Commander. It's just, you know, we've gone from worrying about, I don't know, the big thing when I was in school was gum.
Yeah.
You know, don't chew gum, spit out your gum, don't stick your gum on the underneath the desk. Gum was always a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And talking, that's about all I remember as far as things like we would have brought in.
Yeah.
Maybe food or drink. I didn't really see a lot of that when I was in school. Mm-hmm. Gum just was the thing, you know, most.
It's weird now because, like, gum is not an issue. People can chew gum wherever they are in the school. Now it's phones or social media.
We've talked about that. But now we've gone even, and I won't say past that because it's almost regressive. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gone from this progressive thing from, you know, where you wouldn't bring toys to school unless it was show and tell day. Mm-hmm. And now we got into phones and technology. Now it's like regressive. Now we're back to toys. Can I bring, you know, my ball in a cup? You know, I
don't. Well, now I will say I've bought myself one too. Yours has the cross and shield. Mine has pennies, but it's the same basic.
Like Lincoln pennies?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, but I keep it. It's on my computer. And I've noticed in the past couple of days that when I'm doing something like schoolwork or whatever, I'll just pick it up and spin it, not thinking, you know, not rational head.
Doing it mindlessly.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just grab it.
I get that. But that occupies your hands at least. I don't.
Yeah.
Anyway, it just seems a toy to me. Maybe somebody out there has got some, what you want to call it, testimonial about how a fidgety spinner saved their life or
brought my C student to an A student.
Exactly. That's the way they're pushing this thing. Yeah. Like, oh, it's some kind of magic cure. And I'm like, it's a toy.
It's a toy. It's a bearing shrouded in plastic.
It's a cool toy. I like it. I mean, I'm going to play with this one, but it's a toy. In a simple kind of toy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing really complicated, complex about it. What do you think? Well, you're in the school. Are you seeing them? The kids are bringing them. They're having them. They're everywhere. Okay. What do you think is the appeal? And I'm not. And it's nice. I'm not saying I don't like get why it's kind of fun,
like,
to play with, but like, why the craze?
It's like anything else. Like my phone. My daughter put one of these little pop thingies on it.
Right. Right. I've seen those.
This is called a pop socket. And there is absolutely no purpose for it. At all.
Well, it keeps your phone, like, you can set it down at an angle if you want to watch a video on it or something.
It falls right off the table.
Oh.
It doesn't work. It doesn't do that at all. But it's just something else for them, like a status symbol. Like, who has the best fidget spinner? Who has the coolest pop socket?
Why that? You know, why not ball in a cup, you know?
I imagine there's some company out there that has done some sort of market research that is making a killing off these things, probably.
Well, you think, but there's something that they didn't patent, because I'm seeing them everywhere. Like, I've told you before about these sites where I shop to get, like, cheap electronics and things like that shipped from China. You get them cheap, but you got to wait for them to get shipped. I buy a lot of watches and stuff. They were actually selling them for free with $2 shipping.
Yeah.
And they have pages and pages and pages of them. So they're not branded.
No,
but somebody missed the boat on that one, don't you think?
Oh yeah,
that it's not Hasbro's fidget spinners. Yeah. It's not come back to G.I. Joe.
It's Mattel, made by Mattel.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. So somebody missed a boat somewhere. I don't know.
And what's weird, like I went to the flea market over the weekend with the girls, and there was a million. Like every booth had fidget spinners and those little cube things, and cell phone cases. I mean, every booth had some of those in it. You know.
At the kiosks at the mall, it's all sunglasses and cell phone cases. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I don't get it, but like most other things, everything else we've done. We should rename this show. Dave doesn't get it. Yeah. Dave doesn't get. I don't guess I get anything.
Two old guys anymore. Don't understand.
And I'm not that old. Like I said, I just turned 43. But I don't know. Everything's falling apart. So speaking of things I don't get. Let's talk about this show that everybody's watching now. I finished it. You finished it. I'm only just give you the floor first because I have no idea, you know, kind of where you are with it or what this 13 Reasons Why. And it's a show about 13 reasons why some self-absorbed kid killed herself. And she leaves these tapes behind to – I said I wasn't going to editorialize. Now I'm kind of doing it. She leaves these tapes behind because her suicide isn't enough. Now she got to guilt trip everybody that she knows as how they contributed and all this kind of thing. And it becomes kind of an elaborate game where you got to listen to the tapes and you got to pass them on to somebody else. And so tell me what you know, what your viewing experience was, what you think about it.
Well, it's the 13 people that led her to commit suicide. So there's a tape for each person.
According to her,
right, yes. But, you know, being in the schools and seeing, especially girls, man, about that age, that 15, 16, 17-year-old girl age.
Yeah. It's tough.
It is That's tough. That's a tough age. That's a tough age for them. And to see the stuff that she went through, I mean, you see it every day in the school system.
Well, one of my questions for you, I thought it before we came in here, was because you're going to view it, I mean, just the fact we're different people means you view things differently, but you have a different experience. You're a few years younger. Mm-hmm. You're in the schools. You have daughters. Mm-hmm. You know, so my question was, and maybe I already kind of know the answer, how that informs your viewing of this.
Well, now, in the show itself, I think the concept of it is crazy. I'm not going to say that it wouldn't happen that way in real life. But it does bring up some questions and some things that maybe you should talk about with your kids. You know, if this gives you some way to, like, break the subject with your kids, a popular TV show where you can say, hey, you know, if you're not feeling good or if, you know, there's something going on you talk about, you know, I'm here for you or whatever.
Do you think this is a program kids should watch?
I think that, you know, it's got some strong language in it. It's got some issues, some strong things in it. But I think a 15, 16, 17-year-old girl should probably watch it.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't. And I'll tell you why. But again, more curious about that. You touched on that these things occur. And of course, you're in a position that you're there in the school. But I mean, I guess we would all assume no matter what your position is in the school, no matter how long you're there, a lot of things are going to go unseen and unnoticed.
Well, you know, have you ever watched the movie The Memphis Belle?
When it came out, but that's been 20 years ago.
Well, it's a 2-hour movie about one flight the Memphis Belle took. But in order for them to make a movie that would sell tickets, it's about every mission the Memphis Belle took, all the bad stuff that happened in every mission condensed into one flight.
Right.
So I think this is probably
a composite story
of different things that could happen in the high school situation.
I got you. Okay, well, I'll start here very broadly just talking about production and as a program. To me, jump in and tell me I'm crazy at any point when I'm talking about anything, it was insufferably long, much longer than it needed to be.
Yeah, it could have been
so
a movie.
So slow. Exactly. It could have, I mean, even if it was half as long, I get the conceit of 13 people, 13 tapes, so 13 episodes. I get the idea. That was not the way to go.
Yeah.
And even if they had maybe compartmentalized it a little better where each episode really was about a particular person and that's kind of the way they set it up, but then it's like as it went along, it would kind of lose its way and go off into another direction. That's just kind of my production notes on it. Just incredibly too long. So here are my thoughts about it. And the thing that everybody really got to debating about was whether what the benefit was, if any, of the way that this story dealt with the issue of suicide. Mm-hmm. Some people felt this was an important way to approach the topic, to make people sensitive to the issue, whatever, that it was good for, somehow would be good for suicide prevention or crisis prevention. Other people said, no, it glamorizes suicide. You know, from the beginning, the kid has killed herself. She's the star of the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest of the characters spend 13 hours of TV playing a game that she's left for them to play after she's dead to guilt trip themselves and all that. I get both of those. I'll say this, my experience, and I think this is one of those shows that you bring a lot with you when you come into it. It's already, your experience is already going to be colored by your opinions, feelings, emotions. It's one of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. When I went to read on IMDb to read reviews of the program, what I got was a lot of opinions from people. Mm-hmm. Things like we're kind of doing here,
yeah,
which this is kind of an avenue for, but rather than reviewing the program, they were kind of debating this whole suicide issue. For me, I wasn't really moved one way or the other on that particular issue. Mm-hmm. Like, is this a good way to deal with suicide? Is it a bad way to deal with suicide? I think by focusing in on that one area or that one idea about how this show deals with suicide, people missed a lot. What to me were much more troubling elements of the show and the way things were presented. Let me just kind of rattle them off. I don't have a list or anything in front of me. I was telling this to Gretchen earlier, and she fell asleep, so it's not a good sign. And she tried to watch it. She watched with me. We sat down to watch it together. She made it through three episodes, went to sleep. I continued to watch. And tonight she asked me, did you finish it? What happened? She didn't want to go back to it. She was bored with it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that if they had like a summary version of it, I think it would probably be right. A whole lot better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Edited for television.
Yeah.
For time and content.
Yeah.
You know? Give me the 4-hour.
Give me the Cliff's
ABC notes. Miniseries version. Yeah. Okay. Here's where I think it's dangerous and why I would not show it to kids or young people that age. It reinforces a false idea that teenagers already have. Does it accurately represent them emotionally? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being that age, and I remember being overly emotional and putting too much significance on things that really were not significant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think the sky is falling, and
right?
Nobody loves you, and you know, any little piece of rejection or things that you're not emotionally equipped to deal with yet. You're not mature enough. The problem is this show then presents these kids as more sophisticated than young people are.
Right.
It's kind of like the Kevin Williams and Dawson's Creek mm-hmm. thing. You remember that was one of the things. It was both appealing about the show, but was also something that you recognized was hyper real surreal.
It's hard too when you work in the high school. You got to think of these guys as kids. They're still kids. You remember yourself when you're that age. Even at 18, getting out of high school, I was mentally not an adult until several, even probably not now in some
The way that they're presented as interacting with each other, even though they're having all these youthful emotions, is very, in their speech and their interactions are sophisticated.
Very grown up.
And I think that's a negative thing to reinforce in someone that age who watches this, compounded with some other things that I'll go into now. Parents are either absent in the show or are they're either physically absent or they're just inept or unaware.
Yeah.
And again, I feel this sense, this thing that's being communicated to me through this show that, you know, these kids are kind of doing it on their own, but they're okay to do it on their own. This independence of the child, you know, I think, and maybe you're going to think I'm seeing some sinister things that aren't there, but just stay with me. Let me build some more on this breakdown of the family. And the fathers in the show, the ones who are presented as good fathers are emasculated, or they're rather than scold their children or punish them, at one point, like I saw the Clay's dad says, hey, kiddo, gentle reminder, we don't do this. He comes home one night, stayed out all night, getting drunk, getting in a fight, whatever he's doing, he comes home. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm grounded. No, you're not grounded. We're just all about feelings. Feelings.
Yeah.
And that, when I talk about the fathers being ineffective or emasculated, then you get, let's look at the characters in the show, specifically the male characters, mm-hmm. right? Who are the positive male characters or given to us as the male protagonists positively in this show? They're waifish, they're sickly pale, and they're effeminate. I'm just being real.
But, I mean, if you go to school, to high school now, that's how the boys are.
Well, but what I'm getting at is there's a hostility here towards masculinity, mm-hmm. you know?
It's that way everywhere, though.
And where, and again, what's kind of uneven with the characters where, you know, Clay is so complex and Alex is so complex and multifaceted. Anybody that presents any masculinity is a villain in this, right?
Yeah.
You know, the bad guys, the jocks, are, unlike the other characters, very one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. They're all date rape and AIDS jokes and drinking beer, right? You know?
Yeah.
And this also gets to an overreaching sense I had watching this show that it just felt insincere, right? Everything felt so manufactured. Nothing felt... The characters to me didn't feel organic, and they felt very contrived. And again, oh, here's the positive males, and they're waifish and sickly and effeminate. And here's the bad males. Any sign of masculinity.
They should be wearing those rompers that are coming out now, the jumpers.
And the kids in the show are presented again as, and it's presented as like it's normal. And again, I would not want my young person watching this thinking that any of this was okay. They apparently go to parties every night mm-hmm. with beer and dope and all manner of activity, date rape and AIDS jokes, and they'll leave school. They just kind of come and go from school. Hey, I really need to talk to you. Let's break out and go. Let's drop school and go to the coffee shop or mm-hmm. or go for a drive. And it's presented as like a mature way, you know, like you would meet with a friend to go, hey, I need to meet with you. Can we go talk or something?
Yeah, let's blow off work and go.
But they just do it coming and going from school. And again, it's presented as, okay, I don't really see any consequences. You know, throughout the show, there are places where kids did get in trouble for things. Mm-hmm. Did you ever really see anybody getting in trouble for just coming and going from school?
No.
It was strange to me. The kids all have, and like more than one has tattoos up their neck,
like, well, no, that is
on their head and stuff.
In schools now, the kids do have. I had one kid the other day who had just gotten a tattoo, and it was not a very good tattoo at all. I mean, it was like,
how old are we talking about?
18. I mean, you know, senior year.
I'm watching this, and I'm seeing all these kids with tattoos. I'm like, I thought you had to at least be 18. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've never had one. But up their neck and mm-hmm. on their heads. And
I've seen more neck tattoos since I started working at the high school than I have in my life.
Does that not just break your heart for somebody? Like
I know, because...
Like you see it and you go, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, I feel bad for what you're going to feel.
Unemployable.
What? Why?
Yeah.
You know, and kids, hey, will kids do things like that if they're allowed to? Yeah. But like I see them come and go from home. And like the one kid, Alex, who... you know, has the police officer father, and he's obviously a more sensitive child. He's not, you know, doesn't quite have the masculine authority figure mm-hmm. is sort of emotionally absent and doesn't understand his child and all that. He's not presented as a villain, mm-hmm. but every parent, you know, there were very few examples in there of parents who were presented in a positive fashion, or when they did try to present them as positive, they weren't parents. Mm-hmm. They were, hey, buddy, hey, you know, gentle reminder, soft voices.
Well, have you seen the that new TV show Riverdale?
I watched an episode or a half or something.
It's the same deal with the teenage angst and all the emotional depth.
The same theme or mood, but a little bit more surreal though. I mean, it's like Twin Peaks kind of. I kind of felt like they were kind of going for that vibe. I covered the characters, the mask, the uneven nature of, like I talked about how some of them were one dimensional, and oddly enough, the primary character, this whole show is centered around this one girl, and even to the very end of the show, even down to the last scene, I didn't feel like I knew her because it felt like she was written differently at whatever moment they wanted me to think something about her. I could not have told you by the end of the show what was in character for her and what wasn't.
Yeah.
She felt very uneven as the character was written, as it was presented. it just, I never knew where she was coming from, and it changed, and I'm not doing a very good job explaining myself. Maybe you understand what I mean. It felt like they were trying to fix a lot of stuff. They were trying to force a lot of character development in the writing that wasn't translating.
Yeah.
It wasn't coming through.
And I just felt like they were trying to make her sketchy, kind of like back and forth.
You know, I had a moment in the middle of the series when I thought, is she running some kind of con? Mm-hmm. Or is there something more sinister going on? Maybe she's not supposed to be sympathetic, because it came up a couple of times that didn't happen that way. Mm-hmm. Or she gave a note to some boy and he hurt her feelings because he balled it up or tore it up, threw it on the floor. Mm-hmm. Well, when he's confronted about it later, he says that didn't happen. And he has the note.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of moments like that. And I thought, well, maybe come to find out, they weren't that clever. What they were doing was developing another theme that I had a problem with, which is your truth and my truth.
Yeah.
Well, but Randall, that was Hannah's truth.
Alternative facts.
It was her truth.
Yeah.
Well, that's not my truth. And it gets, again, what kind of crap is that? Your truth? Yeah. It's this world we live in now, right? Mm-hmm. My truth, my feelings. My self-worth, my it's not your truth, it's not my truth. Look, I don't have a monopoly on truth. Truth. Mm-hmm. You know, either the note hit the floor or it didn't. And obviously it didn't, because the boy had. So her truth is wrong. Mm-hmm. and that needs to then, that should call into question everything after that. Now, I thought, and it got hopeful for a minute, I thought, okay, maybe they're going to give us something clever. We're going to get to the end of this and find out, oh, yeah, by the way, I've concocted all this just to make you suspicious of one another, mm-hmm. and to make you turn on one another. And like she was kind of hurting him from beyond the grave, which she ultimately did.
Yeah.
And the way she did Clay, and to go, well, actually, you know, you're responsible because you didn't care enough. You didn't love me enough. And I'm like, what an awful thing to do.
Yeah.
Like I did not feel for this girl very much at all. And let me ask you this. As you're watching, how much, if at all, do you think she has any responsibility for anything that happened in her life?
Oh, it's all. I mean, everything that happened to her, you know, you don't say that someone getting date raped is their responsibility or whatever. But if you put yourself in that situation where you're at a party and you're in the hot tub with another guy, and girls, keep yourselves away from that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that's right in any sense of the imagination, but, you know, take yourself out of that situation.
And you know what's odd is you cannot, it's not politically correct to give people that cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. And she even says to herself, I don't know why I walked up. I just had a bad experience at the other party. You know, she watched a friend get raped at a party the night before, and she stumbles upon another one. What does she do?
By the same guy.
Takes off her clothes, gets in the hot tub with the rapist.
Yeah.
Drinking beer. What in the world?
That's another problem I have, too. And the way society reacts now is that, you know, 100% of men are going to rape a woman.
Rape culture.
If, you know, she dresses a certain way or does a certain thing. That's not true.
Rape culture. All sex is rape.
Yeah,
rape
that's culture. Not true at all.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It goes back to, like we're talking about, this rape culture idea on our college campuses, you know, 1 in 4 and all this. And, you know, I gave you the simple test. Yeah. You know, do you want your daughter to go to college? Well, yeah. Or would you send your daughter? Okay, if you knew there was a 1 in 4 chance your kid was going to get assaulted or raped, you would not send them. Mm-hmm. Would you?
No.
I mean, you wouldn't take those odds. No. I wouldn't. Mm-mm. So, but yet, people are still sending their kids to school. And there was one more thing I just kind of lost track of. And a lot of threads at the end that they didn't tie up, you know. And then it was like in the last few minutes, oh, yeah, this character killed himself. And, oh, yeah, this is then. Yeah. And then they drive off.
Uh-huh. Like, season two, buddy. Season two.
It was 2 or 3 hours into the show before. I remember because, like, one girl stood up and slapped the other. Uh-huh. And I was like, all right, finally something has happened. That was like the old, like 2 or 3 hours. I don't know what episode it was finally in. I was 2 or 3 episodes in. Somebody, one character slapped another, and I got excited because I thought, all right, now something is happening because nothing happened. Mm-hmm. These kids moped around. So you kind of see where I'm coming from about I don't want the things that are presented as sophisticated or normal in these kids. I don't want a kid who's emotionally in the same place that these kids are sitting down and watching this and thinking, getting validation from it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into this, my truth, your truth, the tattoos and the running out of school and the booze and the promiscuity and all of that nonsense, or the resentment for authority that the parents are, you know, and thinking that that's okay. And that would be my concern. Maybe I'm a little too paranoid, but have any of your kids watched this, or will they?
No.
Or do you don't want them to?
No. Madeline's my oldest is 12.
Now, why not? Because when we started this conversation, she's too young.
Yeah.
Just an age thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought to myself, I wondered, like, how would I feel differently about this show if it were the same premise with, like, adults in an adult world? And I think it would be easier for me to swallow.
Yeah.
I could have handled it a little
bit. A lot of Madeline's class has watched the show. A lot of the kids in her class.
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
And they're... You know, they're all talking about it. One girl was despondent, Madeline said, and was crying because of the end of the thing. But I think she's too young to. I mean, I'm sure she understands the whole situation. I'm sure she understands what's going on. But some of the themes in the show are a little bit too.
One thing old. I'll really hold against them more than anything else was the graphic depiction of the actual suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessary at all.
Yeah.
And it did not do anything to inform my viewing. I wasn't like emotionally moved by it, like for purposes of the drama. It was jarring.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I didn't feel like even in the last episode, by the time I've been listening to her for 13 hours. And by the time she finally climbs in the bathtub to do it, I still don't feel like I understand her. I don't feel like I understand her motivations. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, here it is, boom. And it didn't inform the story at all. It didn't, you know, it didn't move me emotionally, like for her or anger. I just felt jarred at the image.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking last week about, or the last time we were here about, you know, the nudity and how it's distracting. Yeah. This is sort of obviously a different thing, but it was like, we knew what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning of the show, even during that same last episode, Clay gives a very graphic, explicit account of what she did. And I just like, that was too much. And it didn't do anything to help that story at all. And do you think? Or?
No, I don't think. I think they could have left that whole scene out of it. Completely. I mean, we know what happened. We don't have to know how it happened or, you know, have a visual of how it happened or any of that stuff.
Very jarring. Very. And I can hear the arguments and the defense that, because, you know, you think about, like, if you've seen similar scenes in other movies where somebody is lighting candles and puts on some orchestral music, there's like some sort of ceremony or romantic ritual about it, you know, I can see them going, you know what, that's not the way it happens. It's very unglamorous.
Mm-hmm.
It is very jarring and brutal. So that's not enough for me. That's not enough for me. I just didn't, basically, let me put it to you this way. imagine I knew nothing about the show, mm-hmm. and you turned on for me just that scene in that moment. Hey, watch this. And I watched a video of an actress in a scene getting in and saw this scene, this depiction of this suicide. Mm-hmm. I had the same level of disgust that I did already having watched all the episodes.
Yeah.
That means somebody did something wrong. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I don't want people to hear that it didn't affect me. It did very deeply. And that's not something that happens a lot, especially when, you know, watching violence. I'll be the first to admit I'm a little desensitized.
Yeah.
But I just thought of that now. If that's all I saw, this visceral reaction I had was just the same after I had seen the entire story. So it did nothing. Mm-hmm. It was too much. Too much. And they're all worried about the rape scenes and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm hard pressed. I just don't think it was great television. Mm-hmm. You know, even aside from controversy, aside from criticism, I just don't think it was that great. It wasn't especially well written. I know what it was. The other thing I was going to say, this is minor, maybe compared to all this horrible stuff we've just talked about. But I wanted to reach through the screen and choke that kid and go, listen to the tapes. He would not the whole show is about him listening to the tapes, and he won't listen to the tapes. And everybody around him keeps going, you just need to listen. You just need to listen. I can't. Well, what happens next? Where's my tape? What am I? And they're like,
just listen to tapes.
What person would not sit and listen to them all?
Yeah.
Immediately.
In a row.
And one guy says that. He's like, I listened to them all in one night. What do you mean? And that required me to let go of so much, you know, and I can suspend a whole lot of disbelief, but it was just the conceit of the show. It insisted upon itself. It seems to think it's better than it is. It's more important than it is. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the smaller things that it communicates are what I had a problem with. I just don't think it was, but I don't think it's great television. It just wasn't, you know, it won't go down with The Sopranos as well. So anything else needs to be said about that or think about that? But you liked it though.
Yeah, I did like
it. Would you say overall you liked it?
Well, like, you know, just from being with the kids daily, you know, the high school kids, I see they go through a lot of stuff that we didn't have to worry about when I was a kid. All the social media stuff and
that's true.
Cyberbullying.
Can't imagine.
You know, I can't imagine having a record of everything I did when I was in high school.
And when we've talked about that here, too, or having people, your friends or enemies or whoever, who have basically you're within arm's reach electronically,
mm-hmm.
that they can get you at any moment, at any time. They can say anything to the world about you, not just among your circle of friends. Did you feel at all that they were really reaching in how we're defining bullying? Because, I mean, obviously there are some very bad things that happened to Hannah. Well, for example, like the one kid who takes the pictures, mm-hmm. the stalker kid. You know, when he goes in to talk to the counselor, he tells him, look, you know, they choke me and throw me in the lockers and pull my pants down and mm-hmm. put my head in the toilet, whatever. And I'm like, that's bullying.
Yeah.
Clearly. Not that anything else isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, I felt worse for him than I did for her watching the whole series.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to consider, too, that age group, the emotional bullying in that age group is tough because they're already emotional anyway. They're going through puberty and, you know, their hormones are getting all crazy anyway. And then to have people messing with their emotions on a daily basis, that's got to be tough for them.
But it's life.
Yeah.
It's life. What can we do about it? Hey, kids, don't say anything mean to anybody. Well, that's what we're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're trying to control speech. I mean, Randall, people say mean things.
But it's different, you know, like, as me, if somebody says something mean to me, whatever.
It is different. They're more emotionally fragile, and they're immature. I'm not saying it doesn't hurt them,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't hurt them more because of their immature little brains.
Yeah, the lizard brains.
But at what point do we help our children navigate these things rather than trying to, you know, like eggs, putting them in an egg carton and carefully putting them in the refrigerator so nothing touches them or breaks them.
I think physical bullying.
So you got to hard boil them.
Is pretty much done. I don't see any physical bullying anymore. So they just have to go on to the next step. They got to have something to do.
Oh, you don't?
No.
You don't see it. You think it's not there? It's not as prevalent?
I mean, I'm sure that there's some, but not nearly as bad as when I was a kid or when you were a kid, probably.
Well, yeah, okay.
We didn't have all this emotional warfare going on. We just beat each other up. That's all.
Nobody was worried about my feelings.
Yeah.
My truth. Your truth. So I don't know. And I it's not that she wasn't treated unfair, but I mean, they sort of, I guess it's the way they juxtaposed what to me were things that weren't comparable, like a physical forcible rape,
mm-hmm.
Compared with her friend stopped talking to her.
Yeah.
And like in her mind, these were almost equivalent.
And you know, I mean, in that age group, that could be about equivalent. I mean, to their experiences.
Well, and there's a cascade effect of all of these things culminating.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just the way it was presented, like at times when she's like, we used to hang out at the coffee shop, and then my friend stopped coming. And I'm like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
And you want to say, but, you know, but see, nobody will, from my vantage, like teaching kids and nurturing them to navigate these things is sitting with a kid like that and going, look, I had all kinds of, maybe I had a whole handful of friends in high school. I was going to say I had a lot of friends. I didn't have a lot of friends.
I had a good 3-4, you know, maybe.
You know how many I talk to now? There's one or two that I still do talk to from high school, like none from college.
Mm-hmm.
It's like for the next 20 years, people are going to come in and out of your life that will be important to you at the time that within a certain time window, you may never see again.
Yeah.
You may never talk to again. And what you got to understand is people come in and out of your life. You know,
you remember like graduation night, you know, when you graduated from high school and you went around, yeah, and everybody was hugging each other and giving each other high fives.
Right. Class of 92 forever.
Yeah. Last time you saw 99% of those people.
Well, you know, I'll say, though, our class has been really good and pretty regular about reunions, mm-hmm. and our reunions have been really good. I don't know what it is. There's something special about our class. Now, not when we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
We were probably average, you know, compared to others. You know,
my class was told every year that we were the worst class that ever went, yeah, through Carter School.
Yeah. Why? What made you worse?
I don't know. I think I don't know if it's just a culmination. The kids get worse as the years go on. But we were told that from the time we were in seventh grade on, that we were the worst class ever to come through.
Wow. Well, see, in my high school experience, it was, again, probably representatory of, it was pretty cliche. Mm-hmm. You know, there's jocks and there's cheerleaders.
It's the same kids.
Nerds and there's whatever. And then there's kids like me and my friends who kind of didn't really fit in any of them. We were nerdy, but we were rocker types and, you know, whatever.
What's hilarious is that when you work in a bunch of different schools, it's the same kids over and over again. You know, you have the same kid here that you have at this school. There's that really popular, yeah, athletic guy. Then there's the real nerdy kid that's really smart. And then there's the, you know, the,
see,
really pretty girl.
That's just it. They, you know? Since the beginning of time, since somebody opened a public school and will be this way forever, it's organic. It occurs on its own. There's a science, a biology to the way that these class structures, you know, are they healthy? Are they not? It just is. And my attitude is help these kids navigate it, help them get through it, and give them tools and resources to deal with it so that by when they do get adults, they go, oh, I see what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of what happened to me. Now, what I was going to say, though, is like now, once we graduated and started to have reunions, like all of that stuff disappeared. Like our reunions and like the connection among the kids, the 40-something-year-old kids who are in my class now,
yeah,
is great. It was like once we all got back together, everybody liked each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was really strange. There was no trying to impress. There was no, people were genuinely interested in what you'd been doing and your families. And mm-hmm. some of that is social media too, where we stay in contact with each other now, yeah, like you wouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
when you really didn't see somebody for 15 years and weren't going to see them for another 10 years.
Yeah.
And something really good happened. Maybe it's just a class full of good people. Maybe we all were, mm-hmm. but we, even like those of us that didn't have anything to do with each other in high school or weren't friends, maybe we didn't even like each other. We all do now.
Yeah.
It's really a unique, special experience. You mentioned school. Where did you go to school? Were you out in California then?
I was in East Tennessee in Knoxville.
Okay. By the time you were in high school, you were in Tennessee then. Mm-hmm. So it was a big school.
pretty decent sized school, kind of a country school. You know, Knoxville, the city, and then Knox County around it.
Right.
And we were in the eastern rural part of Knox County, but still pretty decent sized school.
Yeah.
Had elementary, middle, and high school all on the same campus, but three separate buildings.
You know, and I was in a private school, not the smallest, but smaller. There was 70 something in our graduating class. That may have something to do with it too. You know, if you get a class that's got 300 or 400 in it, you don't know everybody.
We had 250 in my graduating class.
They're just going to be harder to anytime. You can't go into school and connect with 200 people. You know, mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I would welcome any response, any feedback. I just wasn't impressed with the show from a television level. I just don't think it was great television. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the worst I've ever seen. I wouldn't feel as sour about it had I not spent as long with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it was a 4-hour miniseries, I'd be a lot better with it. But, and maybe I'm off base. Maybe I'm out of touch with all these other things. I don't like – the show seems to want to inform culture rather than reflect it. And I felt that too much. Like, this is the way you're supposed to think about things. Mm-hmm. This is the way kids are supposed to think about things. And that's what bugged me. I can make up my own mind, but I don't know. So I definitely, my recommendation is I would not, you know, I mean, of course, I guess if your kid is 17, they're kind of free to, they can go to an R-rated movie, watch what they want to watch. Mm-hmm. I would not encourage or want, you know, my teen or preteen to watch it. You're sort of the same opinion, maybe with a little bit more liberal on the age
15,
range.
15, 16, 17, I'd probably be okay.
If you could, but you would want to kind of...
I want to be there with them.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Sit down on the couch with me. Watch this.
How did that episode make you feel?
How's that working out for you?
How are your feelings? Okay, well, we'll be back on the other side of surgery, so I'd appreciate any prayers and good thoughts and wishes and anything you can direct my way. And prayers for Dr. David Villarreal that he'll have a steady hand and a gentle demeanor. He's been as gentle as he could be.
He won't poke you anymore.
Lord have mercy. Well, at least when he gets in there this time, he'll leave it better than when he found it.
That's right.
So I'll see you on the other side of surgery, and we'll update on recovery, and we'll come back, and I'll have a little bit of my truth, and Randall will have some of his truth, and we'll find out what some of your truth is. So, until then, I'm Pastor Dave. That's Randall the Armor Bearer. We are
They That Believe.